This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, getting caught up with legendary test pilot Don Malik, whose life story is captured in a just-completed documentary film called Flight Path to NASA, A Pilot's Journey. I know I mention our website, hometownheroesradio.com, from time to time, but this is one occasion where you really ought to head over there. You can watch the trailer for this new film produced by Cameron Mitchell, who we have on the line as well. You can also dive into some serious detail by ordering Don's book, The Smell of Kerosene, and you can pull up our original interview with Don from 2018 to hear about his journey from a boy in Pennsylvania who dreamed about flying to a man who flew almost everything imaginable, including something assigned an acronym I'm sure you're going to hear a few more times today, the LLRV, Lunar Lander Research Vehicle. That was a unique and dangerous challenge. Of the five LLRVs produced, three were destroyed in crashes. Don had the courage to fly something that had never been flown before, to work out some of the kinks, and pave the way for what the astronauts who eventually made it to the moon were able to do. We've got the rest of this hour with Don and Cameron Mitchell, the filmmaker.
I've always liked the story, Don. We kind of close in the documentary about what I had asked you. What did your kids and your boys think about you being, a NASA test pilot? Those going, Mach 3 and plus and all that kind of stuff. And do you remember the story when you were tinkering in the garage and one of your boys was there and the neighborhood kid said, "What does your dad do?" You maybe tell
well,
Paul that
yeah,
story?
That was years ago. I was probably middle of my career then out of NASA, and I was working in a garage and had my work clothes on, and I'm sure it's pretty gritty, and my one son come up with his buddy, and they were talking, and this friend asked my son, he said, "Well, what does your dad work at? What's your dad do?" And my son said, "Oh, he's test pilot out of NASA at Edwards." And this kid looked me up and down, and he said, "He doesn't look like no test pilot to me." And I sort of smiled to myself. I thought, no, I look like a weekend home builder trying to catch up with maintenance around the home. But I didn't fit the image for this young fellow, I guess.
Well, I guess he's not so young anymore, and he can get the whole story if he gets a chance to watch Flight Path to NASA. So, Cameron, what is the latest on that front? When might we have a chance to watch the film that I know has been a real labor of love for you?
Well, currently I'm in the seeking a distribution mode, either by video on demand or, one of the channels. We had a pretty good bite from the Smithsonian Channel. They were interested. So my fingers are still kind of crossed with the Smithsonian Channel. I've been in contact with the Future Legends and other aeronautical type of channel. We're initially going to have our film premiere out at NASA, out at Edwards Air Force Base. And then, like so many things, unfortunately, the pandemic has kind of shut that down, and they were going to pull out the LRV for us and, put out the news press to all LA news stations and things of that sort. So we still have our fingers crossed for that, if we can get past this pandemic thing, and that would be where there would be a premiere of that such. And as you said, currently there's the website is up where your listeners could go. You can give them the website there and view. There's two promo trailers there and a lot of background information about Don's history and a lot of his accomplishments. And so it'd be really fun and interesting for anybody interested in, space travel and aeronautics and, this very interesting man who contributed to, the moon mission and so many other special projects out there at Edwards Air Force Base. And I'll keep people posted through social media and on the website as the project progresses, and hopefully we'll get it out there sooner than later for people can watch the full documentary.
I was pleased to see it when you projected it up here for me on the TV. It was about an hour long, and I thought I was impressed with the way you put it all together, the early years, and some of the pictures you put on there. The quality was impressive on some of the old black and white photographs that you found out of my family album and everything. I just couldn't believe how nice they showed up and came through. So I'm highly impressed, and I'm waiting for it to get on a network or somewhere on TV myself, and I've got a number of family, most of my family anymore at my age are cousins. Everybody else has passed on. In about 3 months, I'm going to click over 90 years old in October. They're waiting to see it, too.
along those lines, Paul, it was kind of funny. Kind of got stalled for a little while there with just me doing my other work in television production and things of that sort. And I got a call from Don about a year ago or so. You know, we always just stayed in touch, but he's like, Cameron, when are you going to finish this thing? I'm, you know, getting up there in my years, you know. And so I said, you know, you're right, Don. I better kick it in high gear. And so, you know, I got an editor on full time and, you know, completed all the other interviews that needed to be done, and was just real excited to, that was, you know, with the downtime with the virus, I was able to pretty much commit full time with my editor and just spend, you know, 10, 12 hour days over a course of probably about 2.5, 3 months of my editor and I. And we put it together and are super gratified with where we went with the direction. And another kind of cool thing is, too, is that, you know, we tied Don's life into, you know, the LRV and the moon mission is kind of the highlight of the film. But it really tells a warm and genuine story of Don's passion for flying and the different projects that he was involved with through his years. You flew over, what, 125 different types of helicopters, amphibians, and test planes and all kinds of things.
Well, I think one of the advantages that I had was when I went into NACA 1957, even before they converted to NASA, I joined them in June right out of college, and I probably had the minimum requirements for test flying. I had the Navy fighter experience, I had an engineering degree, and I was a one-tour aviator and went right into a flight test job. And NASA had such a variety, not only at Langley but out here at Edwards, of flying machines. I just could hardly believe it. The first summer back in Virginia when I started to fly, and I was checking out multi-engines, checking out in helicopters, and checking out various fighters and V-stalls, and I looked around and I thought, my world, these guys fly anything that's around here. And then about a year or two later, I was one of those guys flying about anything they came up with. So, and that was a big, interesting part of my career, I think, was a variety of exposure to be able to do that. And not many people were able to do that. If you work for an aircraft company, you might work with one or two airplanes or something they were building, but that would be it. But with NASA, and within the space program, and had all the supporting missions for the space effort, even though we were still the aeronautics part. So it was a great, great career. No regrets.
I just had another favorite moment from the film that still makes me smile even when I think about it. When I'd asked Don on camera when he first came over to NASA, and Joe Walker, who was the lead test pilot out there at the time, and Joe had asked Don what projects that he wanted to be involved in and would order. And Don told me this story with such childhood excitement, I guess is the best way to explain it, to see Don get so excited after so many years to tell me the programs he wanted to fly. Why don't you tell Paul the three programs that you wanted to get involved with, Don, and how it all kind of came out?
I reported out here in 63. In 1964, NASA come up with some money, and I was able to go through the Air Force Test Pilot School. And when I reported back to the office when I graduated from the school, Joe Walker was chief pilot, and he called me in. And he said, Don, we have three big priority missions here going on. And he said one of them is the XB-70 and the X-15 and the LLRV. And he said, what's your priority? What would you like flying? I said, well, I want to fly the rocket ship first, the X-15. And if I'm not flying that, I'll fly the B-70. And the third one was the LLRV. And I think that's because I still had that fighter pilot attitude from the Navy. I wanted to go fast. So he said, well, you're going to fly the LLRV with me. So he started me on the LLRV, and then I went on. Unfortunately, I had to go on the B-70 because Joe was killed in a mid-air accident. That's sort of bad part of the job, too. But it was interesting, and I think what it was my Langley experience with helicopters made me an ideal man in the office to go over to the
LLRV. I've got a couple more questions for both of you, and if there's anything else you want to shoot in there, feel free. Cameron, okay. When I asked you how long you'd worked on it, the other question I wanted to ask you was, in all this time that you've spent with Don, and I'm sure at times you've imagined yourself in his shoes and what it must have been like in those situations, is there one story or anecdote or one realization that you had that just really opened your eyes, blew your mind, you know, raised your eyebrows, really got your attention?
Yeah, actually, too. I mean, of course, back to that LRV, and you'll see some of this amazing footage. It was one of the particular test flights that Armstrong was flying. And, you know, the LRV, you know, could get unstable at times. And there was a time when Armstrong actually had to eject. You got to keep in mind, you know, they were adjusting for the moon's gravity. And I just was so amazed at and impressed, you know, between the engineers, Gene Matranga and all the team and Don, how they were able to fly this awkward, big dragonfly, spider-looking type of thing and, you know, keep it level and whatever. But when you see the crash that Armstrong actually ejected out of, you know, my heart, you know, went through my stomach when you saw the thing start going crazy and then, shoot up in there and then explode in the air just as he's ejecting. That kind of still sits with me quite a bit. And another unsung project that Don worked on that I think Don probably had a little bit of fun with was the M2F1, which was the lifting body plane that initially started out. It was towed by a Pontiac with one of the local guys out there that, you know, built the Hemi engine. And they towed it up to 100 miles an hour, and it was built by a hang glider company, and that eventually evolved into the space shuttle. That technology kind of kept evolving and evolving, and then Don got to fly it being towed by a C-47. But there's so many wonderful stories, and both funny and whimsical, of Don needing Chuck Yeager pulling Don out of class. Don thought he was in big trouble with one of the head honchos, and he's, what did I do? Am I in trouble? But Yeager had actually invited him to be towed by the C-47 and get a chance to fly the M2F1. So those two stories really stand out in my mind.
You know, and that last anecdote there makes me think of a question. Again, I'm not sure if I asked you this before, Don. Did you ever receive an offer or an invitation to fly an aircraft that you looked at and said, no way, I'm not getting in that thing? Was there anything that seemed a little too crazy for your test pilot mentality?
Most of the programs I flew, of course, were NASA programs, and one of the confidences I had was the fact that we had so much fine support and engineering and maintenance and everything on our vehicle, so I never was reluctant on any of those. I never was exposed to anything that I refused to fly, and not that I was that brave, but maybe it was just my selection. There was a program come down from Ames on a X-wing helicopter, a program similar to others that maybe never made it all the way through to a complete flight where they flew it partially. But this machine was a helicopter with a big X rotor on it, and it was going to take off like a helicopter and transition into forward flight like helicopters do, but then they were going to lock the rotor up, and it was going to serve as a wing, a fixed wing. And I sat in on some of the engineering evaluations on it. That was one program that I questioned the feasibility of it and what they were doing. We were not going to test it at Edwards, but it was going to be brought down to Edwards for the testing by the Ames people. And by the time they got down here to get it ready for testing, they discovered on a test rig down in Florida on this rotor system that when you brought this thing to a stop, the loads were too high and exceeded anything they could handle. And that stopped the program right there as far as trying to do a conversion on this helicopter, taking off, going through forward flight, and then locking the rotor system, stopping it completely. That was out the window. And I think they flew in a couple of flights where they took off the runway with the rotor fixed, like a wing. And they were able to fly it like that, just to look at a very short range of it. But that was one program that I was involved with viewing and doing some of the engineering reviews on that I wasn't truly impressed. And when they made that discovery about those loads and everything they were going to face, and they canceled the program, it didn't hurt my feelings a bit.
I guess not. And it makes you wonder how crazy some of the other concepts over the years might have been. Break time again, but I have a few more questions, including what advice Don Malik might have for young people who want to follow in his flight path. Again, that new documentary is Flight Path to NASA. Check out the trailer at hometownheroesradio.com, and we'll be right back after this. Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 1,000 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.